This is The Real Magic Podcast. Learn about great design and use it to get great results. Now your hosts, Greg Merrilees and Alan Nunez.
Hello, listener, and thank you for joining Greg and I today for The Real Magic Design Podcast, where we try and unpack our experience to help designers and business owners understand how to create amazing designs and work together to make design that is profitable. I'm Alan from Pixel Partners, and here's my co-host, Greg, from Studio One Design.
G'day, Alan. How are you, buddy?
I'm fantastic, mate. How about you?
Really good, mate. Yeah, it's been a great week. And so today on this podcast, we're talking about the boring but important stuff, design agreements. What are they? How are they used? And why are they important for both the client and the designer?
Man, that is going to be a great topic. And it is a bit boring, but I think it is super important. Hey, Greg, before we get into this week's topic, what have you been up to this week? What's happening in your world?
Well, you know, I think it was last week or the week before we discussed redesigning our product offering on our website. So that's in the process at the moment and should be live this week. And so what we're doing is we're creating a VIP membership page, and that's for our existing clients, our repeat customers. It's just a way of us offering them a bit more value, and they're pretty much getting wholesale rates now. So that and testimonial page update, process, etc. What about you, Al?
Man, that sounds pretty good. Me, you know what? I've been digging deep into systems and procedures for Pixel Partners.
Yeah.
You know, we do a lot of high bandwidth transfers for design files and for imaging files. And, you know, bandwidth can be a massive problem, especially these days. I mean, you know, when you're designing bus backs or you're editing images for photographers, they're sending some pretty big files. And particularly after they've been worked on, it can get pretty nasty as far as transferring. So we've come up with some killer hacks that improve the workflow in design and in photography. A lot of it is around photographic editing and how to get their raw files a little bit smaller. So we're going to launch those in the next couple of months with a series of training videos that'll help everyone, not just our clients. I mean, anybody who has a digital workflow and needs to transfer files, a lot of this stuff is going to help. So, you know, it's all just about improving our clients and other designers and other photographers' life and workflow so they're not chained to the computer. So that's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, you guys are really, really on top of your standard operating procedures, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know if I'd say on top of. You know, look, it's a living document. Yeah, and that's a topic for a podcast in the future.
That's true.
We're always aiming to improve them. Just because we've developed a system doesn't mean that in 6 months or 12 months that's going to be ideal.
Yeah.
Especially with technology changing. You know, it's a big thing to focus on.
Absolutely. I think we should do a whole episode on how we run our design businesses.
Yeah, we should dig a little deeper into each of our businesses. Look, that'd be an interesting one. Leave a comment on our iTunes if you'd love to hear about what we do within our businesses to dig a little deeper, because I'm sure we'd be happy to lift the veil on our little secrets.
Absolutely.
Or anything to help out.
Alrighty, Al, let's get stuck into our topic, design agreements, the boring but important stuff.
Yeah, let's do it. Look, I want to pose the first question, okay? Greg, should you have a design agreement? What are your thoughts?
I think the answer is categorically yes. And, you know, it's interesting. It's made me, just knowing that this topic was coming up, it's made me review our own designer's agreement. And guess what? It needs revising. So it's a good reminder to all of us to not only have one, but review it and revise it where necessary. And I would recommend every few months. Okay, another thing I'd like to mention is, you know, one of the reasons that we should have one is because if things do go bad and you don't have one, at least you're open to being sued. It also gives you and the client a clear understanding of what to expect.
Yeah, you know, I think this is really important. I mean, you just talked about it from a designer's point of view, but I think it's important from the client's point of view as well. You know, having clear expectations, knowing exactly how the process is going to work is super important, you know, and what you say about reviewing. I've got clients that I've been dealing with for years, you know, so maybe it is time to sit down and review what we originally agreed and make sure that those are still aligned and that there are no assumptions. You know, from my point of view, yes, 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 you should have a design agreement. Whether you're a designer or the client, there should be something there that is written that puts everything down in place. I mean, if you're a designer, if you don't want to get paid and you want headaches, then don't bother with the design agreement. right? And look, I know I'm going to ruffle some feathers here because there are plenty of designers out there that do not have a formal design agreement every time they do a job, okay? And if you're a client, you know, if you want to risk not getting what you paid for, then don't bother with the design agreement. Just go with the flow. But, you know, it's not always going to happen, but there are going to be times where the assumptions made from both sides do not align, right? And when that alignment is not there, then potential headaches are going to occur.
Yeah, and it won't happen often, but when it does, and I've got a good story of, you know, one time when it did happen to me, and it turns ugly pretty quick. So, I mean, you know, I've been in business for quite some time, 15 years, and many years ago, before I had a design agreement, I had a pain in the ass client who kept changing the direction of the design. And in our design agreement now, we offer unlimited revisions, but as long as they're in line with the original design brief, which is in writing. So it can be a little bit vague, but it usually saves us. And I honestly believe that everybody should put that into their agreement. So this client that we had, he completely changed the direction about five times, cost me, you know, a lot in time and money. So, I mean, I learned the hard way, basically. And that's the purpose of this podcast, so that we can teach other people how to avoid the mistakes that we went through.
Yeah, hopefully. save some pain. Look, I agree with you. You know, what you've got to really consider is, I mean, people go, oh, a design agreement. I've got to write it. I've got to publish it. I have to get people to sign it. People feel uncomfortable getting a client to sign a design agreement. And then clients are like, oh, what am I signing? You know, they don't necessarily understand what's in there. But what you really need to think of is, what is the cost to you if one or two jobs every now and then go bad, right? Because if you have to refund a job, if you have to do the job two or three times over, you know, you not only lose the margin out of that job, right, but you also run a loss. And when you run a loss, you've got to do a lot of work to get that money back as a designer, right? And from the client's point of view, and we've mentioned this in previous podcasts about getting paid the right amount, from a client's point of view, the last thing you need is your designer to be running a loss. Now, imagine it from your point of view, if you had to replace a product three, four, five, six times over because your warranty specifications were not clear and somebody was misusing the product. It goes the same for a designer. That hurts their business. In turn, they're not going to be able to deliver the best thing for you. I mean, ultimately, from my point of view, if you don't have a design agreement, right, you are at the risk of having no profit or low profit due to misaligned outcomes, you know. And the hard part is that most designers are awesome people, right? They really, really want to deliver for the client, right? Unfortunately, there are some clients that will take advantage of that, all right, or that just don't understand the process. But if it's clearly documented, then everybody is on the same page at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely, Al.
Yeah, look, generally, okay, most clients are fair and reasonable. You know, there is always going to be that one that's going to be a headache, and that's the one that's going to cost you the money, all right? So a design agreement is going to cover you for all scenarios, not some, not all your sided, like not just the designer's side, but from the designer and client's point of view, right? And if you're a client, a design agreement should clearly explain what you can expect to be delivered, all right? I worked for a design and print company many years ago, and it didn't clearly explain what would happen if they needed access to old files, for example. You know, and I've seen this with a lot of agencies where clients can't get access to their old files without paying a fee. So all that stuff should be laid out. I mean, a client really needs to know their rights going into this relationship, you know, not just from deliverables point of view, but, you know, what happens if something takes longer than expected or less than expected? I mean, if a job takes half the time that the client expects, is it reasonable for the client to pay half? You know, not necessarily. You know, there may just have been more assets, more resources allocated from the design company's point of view. What happens if it takes longer? You know, if it's taking longer because the designer can't achieve the brief, is it taking longer because the client keeps moving the goalposts? You know, all these things need to be laid out. And also, too, what happens, and Greg, I'm sure you've seen this, where clients just don't finish the job. They disappear. I mean, I don't know if you've experienced it, but I actually had a client, a photographic client, that disappeared for 10 years. and almost to the day, 10 years later, contacted me and asked for prints of that job. And I had no problems with that. Now, I did have a design agreement in place. However, I did not have anything in there that specified what would happen over this time frame. Now, a lot's happened in 10 years. The cost of production's gone up. The product that I'd offered was no longer available. Now, thankfully, he was one of those fair and reasonable people. We sat down and we talked about it. And I was able to deliver him a wonderful product, which he was very happy with. But he did have to pay the bridge between, you know, what he was quoted 10 years ago and what I had to deliver today. And we were all happy, but you can see how there was a risk. You know, having a time-sensitive design agreement is probably important. You know, Greg, I mean, what would happen if you started a website and somebody disappeared for 4 years and came back? Is that covered in your design agreement?
So it's not covered, but what we do is we get paid up front, so it's not as big a deal in that instance. Now, I think there's one thing that you touched on, you know, when you had an issue with this client of 10 years, is that you communicated with the client. And usually a design agreement is a guide for when things go bad, but most of the time you don't need to refer to it because most people are reasonable and communication is king in business in general.
Yeah, definitely. But hey, you just brought up a point. That wedding client, I got paid in advance. So they had actually paid for the product. The problem was 10 years later, that product no longer existed and its equivalent cost me nearly triple what it would have cost me 10 years ago.
But did you have to go and produce the product then?
I had to produce the product.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, from my point of view with a design, yeah, I guess you could say that, you know, wages, et cetera, would be increased. So the price of producing it down the track would cost more.
Yeah, and think about it, right? You're on a flow with the design, right? So your design energy is peaking while you're working on the job. You take a four-year break, you're not going to pick it up from where you left off. You almost have to go back to the beginning. You have to review the entire brief. You have to re-engage that communication with the client. So, you know, just because you're not producing something physical as a designer doesn't mean that you can just let the time lapse. You know, so maybe for some designers out there, there should be a time frame in your design brief, in your design agreement that says, okay, if this job is not completed by, then there may be additional charges. If you don't respond to our requests, then that could have an impact on your job and how long it takes. Look, you know,
I'm taking notes, Al.
Yeah, so am I. And look, this stuff comes up because it, you know, it's happened, you know, and thankfully for both you and I, it hasn't happened and hurt us dramatically. I mean, I have taken a few hits because I haven't detailed my design agreements or photography agreements as well as I probably should have. But how detailed can you go? I mean, go as detailed as you possibly can. You know, try and cover all your bases. And like you said earlier, review it regularly. Add things.
And be fair to the client as well.
Hey, these design agreements are to benefit both parties. I guess that's probably a really good lead into the next question, which is, you know, really what should be in a design agreement? How should it look?
Sure. So, okay, in our business, we have two types of design agreements. So one's for the clients where we provide design, and the other one is for our internal designers. So we don't employ anybody directly. We have them as external contractors, and therefore the agreements that we have with them reflects the agreement that we have with our clients. And it's all based around intellectual property rights.
Yeah, nice. Look, and I mean, you're talking about it from a point of view of what you need to supply your client and what your team is supplying to you. Now, my team are all full-time employees, so as per their contract, we own all the IP and then we pass that on to the client. Now, clients, you need to be sure that you understand what you're getting. Right? Copyright, stock image licensing, you know, intellectual property. Because I've seen instances where agencies only give limited usage of designs. So a company can only use it for 12 months or for the duration of the campaign. And at the end of the campaign, they then have to pay extra if they want to use it further. So, I mean, that's not as common for small designers and small businesses, but it is something that you need to be aware of. Who owns that design when it's finished? Do you have the rights to all the source files or just the finished PDF, the print PDF. There's so many things that need to be covered. And designers, you need to protect yourselves. You do not want a client assuming that they're getting particular things that you may not want to hand over. And clients, you need to be sure that you are getting what you need for the future of your business. You know, so I have with Pixel Partners, we have a slightly different agreement with our clients because we're working for agencies, we're working for other professionals, a little bit like your internal designers, Greg. So we actually hand over all the source files as we're working on the job, not at the end of the job, right? And at the end, we package it neatly and it's there for our clients to utilize, but they have it all the way through. You know, and that's part of our agreement. Now, just before we jump back into more of what should be in it, you made an interesting point that you've got a couple of different types of design agreements. I think there can be a couple of different formats as well. So you can have overriding terms and conditions. You can have specific client terms and conditions. So a client that you might have an ongoing relationship, like the VIP clients that you're talking about. And you can also have terms with regards to expectations on each job, right? That may not be a physical document that is signed. So for example, when somebody sends us a design brief, we have a look at the design brief. And then when we reply to that confirming that we've received it, there's a line in that email that says, you can reasonably expect your first proof in 2 to 4 business days, right? So that, although it's not a design agreement in the formal sense of signing a piece of paper, we are giving that acknowledgement of a time frame.
Yeah, nice. Looks like I need to throw in a few extra features in our agreement.
Isn't it great that we're learning as we do this too, Greg?
Yeah, you got it, mate. You got it. Well, yeah, so there's certainly a lot to put into a design agreement, you know, as you've outlined, and a few points for myself as well. Do you think there's anything else we need to add into this topic?
As long as you can't, look, here's my shortlist, right? Work out how you're going to deliver your terms and your terms or your design agreement. You know, some people will build a lot of that information into their product description. So if they're buying a specific fixed price product, here is what you can expect. And by buying this product, you're agreeing to that. You can have a formal contract. So if you're working on a fairly substantial job that has a lot of components, you might have a formal contract that defines all those elements. Or it could be as simple as job by job. So a good example is, you know, we do a lot of printing in our agency and we have a terms and conditions of print, which does specify all the things that they need to check prior to approving and paying for the job. And what happens if they don't? You know, so a lot of people will approve a job but won't pay for it. Now, if they haven't paid for it, the job does not go to print, right? So all these kind of things need to be considered when you're working out how you're going to do your design agreement. And I think it's just important to have, you know, a few basics that you've got to consider, you know, your time frames. I think that is very important. Misaligned expectations or reasonable expectations of when proofs are going to be delivered. If there's a time critical deadline for that job, you know, they might have an event on. And if they don't have all the designs 2 weeks before the event, then they can't print them and it won't be ready on time and they'll be useless after the event. What the outcomes and deliverables are from both sides. Legal indemnification. Look, designers, I know quite often we don't think about this, but, you know, if a design takes longer than expected and you've got a design agreement saying that you're going to deliver on, you know, the 5th of June and you don't deliver till the 5th of December, and then that website is launched, let's say it's an e-commerce site, and it's turning over $100,000 a year, there are some companies that could turn around and say, well, you didn't deliver on time, so you owe us the money we would have made over that period. You know, what about if there's a mistake on a piece of packaging and there's 100,000 pieces that have been made? You know, who's responsible for that? Make sure that you are covered, but that there's an understanding of what happens if something like that happens, you know?
Absolutely. And on top of the agreement, it should also be in your process as well to make sure that, you know, it's, you know, in your process that you give the client the liability of approving the design, if you like. So you need that bit in writing as well.
Yeah, definitely. Payment, you know, are there progress payments required? Is it pay in advance? You know, make sure those items are clear because neither of you want to have misaligned expectations on payment. You know, you could be waiting for a payment thing, the client knows that they've got to pay, and with no design agreement, you may not get paid on time. Copyright and stock images, you know, so anything that's used in that design, who owns that after the job is paid for and complete, and making sure that you're clear. And clients, please check your stock image licensing. Make sure that the stock image that has been purchased with the right license for what you're going to use it for, because there will come a time where a lot of these stock libraries are going to cash in on their investment of all these people using stock images that are not licensed correctly.
Funny you mentioned that. We were approached recently from one of the stock imaging companies that we use, and they said, look, we've changed our licensing agreement recently, and we noticed you're using these designs for T-shirt prints, which we were. And he said, well, you need the enhanced license for that. And we weren't aware of that at all. And when we first signed up with this company, which was around, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, their rules were different to what they are today. So, the bottom line is that we can't use those images for T-shirt designs unless we have the enhanced license. And that's just too expensive, and our clients wouldn't pay for that. So we've had to, jump ship and go to another company. So, yeah, it's really important to make sure you understand the rules and regulations of those stock images.
Yeah, and look, that's not just impacting you, the designer. It's impacting the client. You know, there's a potential there that they've got product out on the shelves with images that are not licensed to sell. So, you know, you have to be sure in your design agreement that you specify whose responsibility that is. Some designers will get their clients to buy the stock images, you know, and that's a way to take care of that. That way the client has to do the research for the licenses. But like a lot of us designers, we have subscriptions to stock libraries that we use every day. We just need to be sure you're using the right one. Look, that sort of story that you just told is an example of, you know, what might go bad. So, you know, if you have or you haven't got a design agreement, Greg, what happens when everything goes bad?
Well, I mean, geez, you know, if you don't have one, you and the client both don't know where you stand. So, I mean, that's just really important. I mean, clarity in business is absolutely crucial. So, you know, you could lose a client. It could ruin your reputation. I mean, word of mouth can spread really fast in, you know, industries that are quite niche. Or niche for the you American clients, American listeners. And if you are a designer, and I think we just touched on this, you know, before, but if you're a designer and you offer your services on freelancer.com or Elance or 99design, etc., then you should carefully read their designers' agreements too, because you really need to know where you stand with them, and you need to know who has the rights to your designs. So, you know, without knowing that, you just have the potential of being sued. And that's the purpose of this, you know, having a design agreement, is to make sure everybody knows where they stand and it avoids litigation.
Oh, look, sued and litigation, they're dirty words. You wash your mouth out. I agree, but forgetting the big problem of, you know, getting into legal trouble, you know, there is a massive impact on losing a great client. You know, and losing future relationships, because, you know, for every one client, you get referrals, they talk to people, people may choose not to use you because of something they've heard from somebody else, you know. So there's a financial impact on that, you know. You can be held legally accountable for losses, right? But forgetting the worst case scenario, you may not get paid for the job, you know. And then for some of us smaller companies, taking a client to court, if we don't have a design agreement, it's just not worth it. You know, we don't have the money to pay the lawyer to try and take care of this problem, you know. But not only may you not get paid, well, if you did get paid up front, you may need to give a refund. You may need to do the job again, you know. And all of these things, once there's that sour taste, you have the potential of tarnishing your good reputation as a designer for no good reason. Right, because if you had it all laid out in a design brief, there would be steps clearly marked in the design brief as to what do we do if this is not going well, right? And hey, clients, you know, be careful, because your reputation can be tarnished as well. You know, you may have misaligned expectations, you've done nothing wrong, and this designer just turns around and goes, you know, this client is a pain. And then the next design meetup they go to, they're whinging about this client, saying, oh, you know, they made me do this and they made me do that, and I felt like I was bending over backwards for them and nothing made them happy. And all of a sudden, as a client, you're ringing designers in your local area and they're either upping the price because they're scared to work with you or they're not taking on the jobs. So it does go both ways. You know, these design agreements, I've got to reinforce this, you know, it protects the designer and it protects the clients. You know, it enables clear communication without misinterpretation. You know, if there's a problem, it gives the client a recourse if things aren't working out. It gives the designer a recourse if things aren't working out, you know, and everybody has a clear understanding of what needs to be done. I mean, I don't think I could think of a better reason, but everybody knowing what's going on.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Al. There's no doubt about it. Every design business and designer needs a designer agreement. So that's really my killer tip. If you haven't got one, go and get one. And we're going to leave some resources on our post of this on our website to just give you guys a little bit of a starting point. And by all means, you know, check it out and take what you can from the resources. But please go and get a lawyer or, you know, a solicitor to write one up professionally.
Yeah, look, we are not lawyers, right? We want to help you out. So we are going to post some places where you can get templated design agreements, modify them for yourself. But talk to your peers. Talk to other people within your industry. You know, my tip is find out how you can protect yourself and protect your clients so that every relationship you have ends with smiles. You know, make sure that you document your agreements if you're a designer and vice versa. If you're a client, ask the designer, can you please send me information on whatever is important for you as far as an outcome? So that brings us to the end of the podcast today. I'd like to say farewell and thank you, listener, for joining us. Please go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We would really love that. Leave us a comment. We are going to do an episode in the near future where we read out the comments on iTunes so that you you know that we're listening. And go to therealmagic.com and sign up so that we can let you know when there's a new episode out. Greg, thank you very much and have a great day, mate.
Also want to say, Al, that we want to know what you guys think in the way of what topics you want us to address. So by all means, leave comments relating to that as well. So thanks for listening and yeah, have a great week.
See you later and have fun with The Real Magic. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Real Magic Podcast. Hear more at therealmagic.com.